Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Breaking news tonight, caught on video. The sickening moment. Daddy physically forces his six-year-old little son to run full speed on a treadmill because he was, quote, too fat. That little boy, six-year-old Corey, now dead from, quote, chronic abuse. We want justice. Good evening. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. Thank you for being with us.
By 3:48 p.m., this defendant carried Corey's nearly limp body into Southern Ocean Medical Center. He reported that Corey was sleepy and had thrown up. Corey was admitted quickly. He was brought to room 6 in the emergency department. Corey coded. He was intubated. He coded again. He lost his pulse. And by 5:03 p.m., Corey was pronounced dead.
Well, at least he did manage to pull out a handkerchief and wipe his face. I didn't see any tears. Nothing. That's the dad sitting there. I don't know that he deserves to be called dad. When I think of dad, I think of my father who sacrificed everything for us. Something stuck out in the prosecutor's opening statement right there. She's given a great opening, by the way. We're taking you inside the courtroom as this case advances. She said everything was fine other than the bruises. The bruises, everything was fine, but the bruises. In what world is that okay? He was fine other than the bruises. The boy is dead, covered in bruises. This after caught on video, forcing him over and over and over to keep running, venting, spitting, fuming his rage onto a six-year-old frail little boy. The boy is dead. You know how many people around the world would pay everything they've got to have a little boy like that to love? But no. Joining me, an all-star panel to make sense of what we are learning. But first, more of that opening statement.
This case is about Corey and how Corey became the ultimate victim of this defendant's punishment and abuse.
And don't be mistaken. We're going to explain to you how this was not the first time this little boy had come home covered in bruises and scrapes and too afraid to tell mommy what was happening. Straight out to CrimeOnline.com investigative reporter Nicole Part. Nicole, what happened?
Early in the morning, around 9 a.m., Corey's mom, Brianna, drives over to the father's house. Corey is shared custody between mom and dad. She kisses her son, tells him goodbye. He's perfectly fine when he gets out of the car. And we know that around 3:40 later that afternoon, Corey's lifeless body, unconscious, is carried into the medical center.
Why was dad so angry? Was it because mommy was running late? Listen.
They were in Pennsylvania. There was traffic, and they were running late. Corey's mom told the defendant that. But Brianna's lateness, you'll hear, was pissing him off. He told Brianna to drop Corey off at the apartment complex's gym and meet him there. So she did. Corey and the defendant went into the gym, and you'll see what happened next, because that gym had a surveillance system, and you will see what this defendant did to his son inside that gym.
Inside the gym, the video is speaking volumes. Joining me, an all-star panel to make sense of what we know right now, but I want to go first to a veteran trial lawyer, former homicide prosecutor, host of True Crime Boss, Jarrett Ferrantino at jarrettferrantino.com. Jarrett, before the advent of video cams literally everywhere, there was a very strong chance the father turned murder defendant could have claimed that the little boy had some other accident, because the boy was so afraid he would never tell anyone, not even doctors, not even teachers, not even his mother, exactly what dad was doing to him. But because we have this video surveillance, we know what dad did.
That video surveillance speaks for Corey, Nancy. That's his voice in that courtroom. This little boy endured that abuse. You know, and the shocking thing, too, is it was caught on camera, but it was in a public place. It was a gym. To think that he would have done this in a gym where other people could have walked in, only your imagination runs wild of what has gone on behind closed doors with this little boy and his father.
What more do we know? Take a listen.
When Corey Michelot returns to his mother's after his second unsupervised visit with Christopher Greger, the boy's face is swollen and he has a busted lip. Greger offers no explanation, and Corey refuses to tell his mom what happened. Brianna Michelot immediately calls police and files a report of abuse with New Jersey's Division of Child Protection and Permanency. Over the next 20 months, Corey continues to come home with bruises, scrapes, black eyes, and bite marks. Michelot files 7 more reports of abuse, reportedly with little response from DCPP. Emails, texts, and hundreds of calls from Brianna Michelot are unanswered. Agents are sent to interview Corey, but always while he is under the care of Greger.
What does it take before DFACS, Department of Family and Children's Services, will actually do something? How many bruises? How many cuts? And then to interview the 6-year-old little boy, Corey, while he's with his abuser? Do you really think the boy is going to tell the truth? To Dr. Bethany Marshall, renowned psychoanalyst, joining us out of L.A. at drbethanymarshall.com. Dr. Bethany, I can hardly stand to look at these photos of abuse. Many people would refuse to believe it if video had not caught the moment dad forces the 6-year-old boy to run the treadmill because he says the boy is, quote, too fat. If anything, the boy, by the time he died, was too thin. Do you see those bruises on your monitor? They're all over his body, Bethany.
They are all over. And even when the prosecutor said that the child was fine when he was with his mother, he wasn't fine from the standpoint that he had probably been abused for years. The father didn't have interest in this child until he was 4 years old. And it's likely that he abused the child for many reasons, one of which was to get back at the mother. He probably had a rage disorder, but most importantly, he probably thought that the child was unconditionally bad. This is at the heart of child abuse, that the abuser feels the child is bad and also resents that the child has needs, and that's why they often restrict food. I've heard of abuse cases where families actually put a padlock on the refrigerator because they do not want the child to eat. So this child was abused in so many ways. And you know, it's interesting, there was that strange mark on his forehead that the mother reported. In abuse cases, one of the things we see are marks that do not fit any particular pattern, such as a fall or something like that. Often they are on both sides of the body. When a child falls or there's an accident, the bruises will be on the one side. But in this case, we see bruises all over and on both sides, and also bite marks. That's quite common. And it seems that that strange mark on the forehead might have been a bite mark.
In the opening statements, we hear the prosecutor state that there's biting. I've never heard of an adult biting the child. But I'm looking now at the official warrant, the state of New Jersey versus Christopher Greger, that's the father. And it states here that specifically he forced the child to run the treadmill, increasing the speed, putting the child on the treadmill while it was going full blast anyway, causing the baby to fall, placing him back on, and appearing to, quote, bite his head. That I've never heard of biting your child, Dr. Bethany.
Believe it or not, it is a common sign of abuse. And think about it. What is biting? What does that mean? It's a sign of rage. It's primitive. It's kind of explosive. Like the person is so angry. All they want to do is sink their teeth into the other person. That gives us great insight into the state of mind of this father. This child should never have been left alone with this man.
I want you to hear what the mom says on the stand under oath.
Did you speak to Corey in the car before you sent him into the defendant's home?
I did.
And was that the last time that you spoke to Corey?
It was.
Did Corey exit your car?
He did.
And can you tell the jurors where Corey walked?
He walked inside defendant's home.
You're hearing the mom on the stand. I find it very interesting. The dad never seems upset in the courtroom. He looks more angry than anything else. To Bill Dealey, former FBI investigator, specialty forensic photography security expert. Bill, thank you for being with us. I'm telling you, no one would have believed this without the video. Why? Because Corey, age 6, would never rat out his dad. Even though he came home over and over and over, covered in bruises, horrible scrapes up and down his arm. Did you see where his eye, actually his eye was bleeding on the inside of the eye? I mean, how much does it take, Bill Dealey, before somebody will listen? Now the boy is dead. Corey is dead at 6 years old, Bill.
Yeah, Nancy, and this heartbreaking story obviously has this long litany of images that were created, not just by the mother, which, of course, in the defense attorney's hands is going to be kind of twisted around, but that video taken by just a totally independent, you know, operation, the gym, to convey what happened. So you piece those all together and you put together a timeline. And from a forensic standpoint, and I don't want to speak to forensic pathology, but certainly a lot will that play into the cause of death and exactly what led to his immediate, first of all, he couldn't speak, he couldn't carry himself, he was stumbling, and then eventually kind of became limp and went into the emergency room.
Straight out to Dr. Kendall Crowns. Chief Medical Examiner, Tarrant County, that's Fort Worth, has conducted over 10,000 autopsies. Lecturer, University of Texas Christian Medical School. Dr. Crowns, thank you for being with us. You heard what the mother just testified to on the stand under oath, that the dad, for what good it is, states Corey was lethargic, his legs were hurting, sleeping all day, and throwing up. What does that mean?
So it could mean a number of things, but with the video that you've shown, with the extreme amount of exercise that's going on, you can have to question whether the child's dehydrated, becoming lethargic because he's exhausted, not getting any fluid intake, and then getting a low sodium, if you will, and becoming overall just dehydrated, which can lead to death in itself. But then you add on top of that the bruises and the other injuries. There could be other things going on internally that could be making him lethargic and tired.
Dr. Crowns, I want you to hear what we have learned about the initial autopsy. Listen.
The initial autopsy reveals that Corey died as a result of blunt force injuries with cardiac and liver contusions, along with inflammation and sepsis. The Ocean County Medical Examiner lists the manner of death as undetermined. A forensic pathologist performs a second autopsy confirming the blunt force trauma and injuries to Corey's liver and heart. The pathologist found evidence that Corey was chronically abused and believed he suffered an acute traumatic injury to his heart 4 to 12 hours before his death. Corey's death is reclassified as a homicide.
Wow. Dr. Kendall Crowns, what does that mean? Liver contusions, blunt force injuries, cardiac contusions? I thought a contusion was like a blow, like when you have blunt force contusion. Inflammation, sepsis, that's a lot.
Contusions are essentially bruises. It's just a fancier term. So when you see contusions of the heart and liver, that means there was a blow to the chest or the abdomen that was significant enough that it bruised the actual internal organs themselves. Sometimes with those, you can get splitting of the organ, which causes internal hemorrhage to be associated with it. One thing you have to be concerned of with children is if they have a lot of bruises on their skin, they don't have a large circulating amount of blood. So the more bruises they have, the more blood's going into these bruises, the more likelihood they're going to die from just the beating alone. But then you have internal injuries as well as the extreme exercise that the child was being forced to do. So you have all that combined is why he's dying from blunt force injuries. Then on top of that, you have sepsis, which is an infectious component, and that can be a result from neglect or something along those lines, where he gets a disease and gets an infectious disease and then passes away.
So a contusion is, in vernacular, common speech, a bruise. Is that right?
That's correct. Correct.
Okay. So how exactly do you get contusions on your liver and cardiac contusions? What's a cardiac contusion? A bruise on your heart?
That's correct. It's a bruise on the outer surface of the heart, which is called the epicardium. So you have a bruise on the outer surface, and that's from a very hard punch to the chest that causes the chest wall to push in and actually bruise the heart. You have to remember, too, with kids that their bone structure is a lot more pliable because your bones get harder over time. So when little kids have a lot more pliability in their chest, so if they're hit hard enough in the chest, they can get a bruise on their heart. The liver is a little easier to bruise because your liver isn't completely protected by your rib cage. So if you're punched in the abdomen, kind of upper abdomen area, you can get those bruises or injuries to the liver as well.
If you have a serious bruise on the right side of your stomach, let me just say 3-4 inches above your hip bone, is that your liver? But where is your liver?
So liver is on the right side of your body. It's very large on the right side, then becomes more smaller as you go to the left. But it's kind of sitting right across your mid abdomen, with the larger portion of it being in your upper and mid right abdomen is where your liver would be located.
And why would there be that excessive bleeding, Dr. Kendall Crowns? What is underneath the skin there? Left side, just above the waistband, going toward your back.
Left side, just above your waistband. It could be spleen. It could be kidney. Also intestines as well. Also, again, you know, you're mentioning the fact that he looks very bony. He is doing an extreme amount of exercise for a child of his age on that treadmill. Just in those scenes we're seeing, you got to figure there's more of that going on behind the scenes.
After the phone conversation, did you know at that time what hospital Corey was taken to?
No.
And at that time, what did you do?
I started calling the hospitals to see if Corey was there. I also called my local police department to report Corey as, like, I don't know where he is, and I he's not feeling good, he's sick.
You are seeing the mom on the stand breaking down in tears as she describes her ex calling her and telling her their son, their six-year-old son, is in the hospital, but not telling her, refusing to tell her, which hospital. To Dr. Bethany Marshall, that's just another form of torture. If somebody called me and told me John David or Lucy were in the hospital and wouldn't tell me where, can you even imagine trying to find somebody in an ER?
Nancy, this just shows the animosity towards the mother as well as the child. And one of the things we frequently see in child abusers is that they want to dominate and control the child. They hate the child. They want to starve the child. They sometimes commit death by exercise, but they want to dominate and control. So this is just another form of abuse, as you just now pointed out, depriving the mother of knowledge about her own son.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
I want to go back to Dr. Kendall Crowns. Dr. Crowns, I think we've identified, I'm waiting for that video, the moment when the dad actually bites the little boy, actually bites his son. Hold it. Wait. He puts him back on. The treadmill's still going fast. Look, there, right there. He's using both hands to restrain the boy. All he's got left are his teeth. And the boy tries to shrink down. Corey shrinks down to try to get away from the bite. But the dad is actually biting him. His rage is boiling over. And because his hands and feet are occupied, he bites the boy. Dr. Kendall Crowns, have you ever seen anything like it?
Yes, I have. In child abuse cases, occasionally you will get ones that have bites on the face, neck, extremities, chest, back. I've seen it on any surface of the body. But as Dr. Marshall mentioned earlier, the rage associated with the child abuse can often spoil over into just biting. And you are kind of seeing that in this case as well, as his hands are occupied. So the only thing he has left to do is bite.
Stars. Just what this child has been through, Dr. Bethany, when we're showing the bruises on his right side, and then we learn part of the COD, cause of death, is bruising to the liver. That was what that bruise is. Actual bruising to his heart. And then being able to really look and examine the video, and you see his own bio dad holding him by the arms and forcibly biting him in the head.
You know, Nancy, this father had prolonged rage and contempt for this child. Like I said earlier, he wanted to bring the child under his control so he could torture him. Nancy, you and I have covered so many cases where there is death by exercise. Many years ago, a little girl whose stepmother forced her to just walk and walk and walk endlessly, and eventually the little girl died. And in this kind of a case, you know, we see it's not just, you know, all parents get angry with their children now and again, but it's temporary. Then the parent withdraws, they calm themselves down, they reason, they talk with the other parent, and it's just momentary. They don't hit the child. But in this case, the child was actually an object used to disperse rage and hatred towards the child, towards the mother, towards God knows. And you know what, Nancy? When I see this dad in court, maybe I shouldn't say this, but he looks a little roided out to me. Like he looks like he's on steroids or something, like a natural, you know, jawline, huge shoulders. You know, that can produce rage. But notwithstanding, the size of the dad compared to this little boy, and you know, sadly, Nancy, the mental state of this little boy is probably that he feels like he's bad, guilty. He deserves to be punished. I am a bad little boy. And if I don't keep this secret, Dad's going to hit me even more, because that means I'll be really, really, really bad. So one of the things we can't measure is the state of mind of the child and what happens in his mind and psychologically as a result of the abuse.
The day after Corey's examination by a pediatrician, Christopher Greger tells Brianna Michelow that Corey is feeling bad. The six-year-old is sleepy and nauseous. Greger puts Corey down for a nap, and when he wakes up, Corey is stumbling, slurring his words, and is having trouble breathing. Greger takes the boy to Southern Ocean Medical Center, where he's quickly admitted and intubated. Doctors take Corey for a CT scan. During the scan, Corey starts seizing and losing his pulse. Medical staff administer life-saving efforts, but cannot revive Corey.
You know, Dr. Kendall Crowns, remember, you're speaking to a panel of lay people. I'm trying to figure out how bruising, even if to the heart or the liver, causes someone to become sleepy and nauseous. It sounds like a brain bleed, but I know that that's not the COD cause of death. But I know that happens when you have a brain bleed. Then he is stumbling, slurring his words. He's having trouble breathing. So how does that relate to the essentially beating he took on that treadmill, the biting, the beating, the blows? How does that end up resulting in stumbling, slurring, having trouble breathing, sleepy, nausea?
Well, so I would agree with you that it does. Those symptoms sound more like a head injury than they do a abdomen or chest injury. But again, with the extreme exercise, I do think he's potentially dehydrated, possibly getting confused from the dehydration. And then the father becomes enraged and beats him. And then he probably becomes unresponsive. Dad takes him to the hospital. So the initial symptoms of he's, you know, confused, lethargic, are the what causes the dad to become enraged and starts hitting him. Another thing.
Brianna Michelow drives to Christopher Greger's Barnegat apartment for a short visit with Corey 3 days after dropping him off with Greger at the fitness center. Michelow notices odd bruises and scrapes on Corey's forehead and chest. Corey won't tell her what happened, but seems upset and scared. Michelow files another abuse complaint and for emergency custody with DCPP. Michelow also schedules a doctor's appointment for Corey during her next parenting time. Through tears, Corey tells the doctor about the treadmill incident and says Greger forced him to run because he was too fat. The doctor notes 14 bruises or scrapes on Corey's body, but the rest of his tests come back normal. Michelow's request for emergency custody is denied, and she returns Corey to Greger the next morning.
Can you even imagine? Mommy makes an emergency request for custody, and she is denied, and it was just emergency temporary custody until there could be a full hearing. She was denied, and now the boy is dead. Fail by the system. But that's not all. Listen.
Pediatrician Dr. Nancy Deacon saw Corey Michelow on April 1st, one day before he passed. And during her court testimony, she lists out all of the bruises and other injuries present on the boy's body. Dr. Deacon listed a blue-gray bruise on his left cheek, a large yellow-green bruise on his left shoulder, another large yellow-green bruise on his left inner arm, a blue bruise present on his elbow. Beyond over 12 bruises that covered Corey Michelow's body, the doctor noted two areas on the right side of his chest that she called it two areas of hyperpigmented skin, meaning the wound was healing, but pigment had not yet returned.
Yet for some reason, Corey gets sent back to his dad, and now he is dead by treadmill, telling the little boy he was, quote, too fat. I could see the bones coming out of his back. To Jared Fiorentino, high-profile lawyer, former homicide prosecutor, and host of podcast True Crime Boss, Jared Fiorentino, I know that you have interviewed many, many child victims and child witnesses, and you have to unlock their story. They don't talk like we do. For instance, if he's trying to get a date to put on an indictment, you have to say things like, was the Christmas tree up? Did the Easter bunny come? Did you have the American flag, red, white, and blue out? Was it around July the 4th? That's just an example. And I remember the very last thing typically a child would say, I would say, who did this? Who did this? Who made this bruise? Who made you take off your underwear? Who? And there'd be a long pause, and they would say, fill in the blank, Daddy or Uncle Jim or whoever the perp was. It's very hard, difficult to get that out of a child, especially if the child loves the parent, even when the parent is abusing the child.
Absolutely, Nancy. And oftentimes they look down and you know the truth is coming. But when a child can't speak, if Corey could not or would not say what happened to him, just from head to toe, this little boy had bruising at various levels of healing, which is indicia of chronic abuse. The system failed this little boy tremendously. It's so sad to listen to the account of those injuries and those interviews. If you couldn't get it out of Corey, the physicians or whoever examined this little boy or the judge that looked at that emergency petition should have spoke volumes to them.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Dr. Bethany Marshall, I recall an animal abuse case I looked at. And in the case, the perp was shooting BBs at the dog in rapid succession, like a lot, like 20, 30 BBs right at the dog. And the dog, instead of running, was on all fours down, crawling toward the master, wagging the tail and yelping with pain. not running away. And look, I'm just a JD. You're the shrink. What does it mean when the victim is still so deeply attached to the abuser? Corey wouldn't tell that his dad was doing this. He finally did tell, you know, the doctor, ultimately, at first trying to blame it on playing football with his dad, and then finally mentioned the treadmill incident. But what is that? Why do we humans and pets do that? We crawl, go toward our abuser.
I know. It's so tragic. And you said so beautifully earlier, this little boy loved his dad. Of course, we are wired to connect. That's how we survived as a species, is that we bonded with our caregivers. And it's well known that when you interview a child victim, or even an adult victim, you can't start with daddy is bad or your husband hit you, because that person has had some good experiences, believe it or not, with the abuser. Daddy threw the football. Daddy maybe told him a bedtime story. Daddy fed him. So that dad is not all bad to the child. And this is a very important thing to remember whenever, let's say, you have a friend who's in an abusive relationship or a church, fellow church member, to not say, well, why are you with him? Or he's a horrible person, but to try to acknowledge both sides of their experience with that person, because that is actually more genuine and true and will align them with you, and it will give you a better chance of helping them.
Joining us is an investigative reporter with Crime Online, Nicole Parton. Nicole, not only investigating cases, but very, very familiar with the foster system. Why is it takes so long, Nicole, and you've seen it over and over and over, for children to actually be removed from an abusive parent?
So many cases. And in this case, if you count up the number of times that Brianna reported the abuse, over 100 times. She made calls. She was doing everything she could to report the abuse of her son. One day before Corey's death, she was denied that emergency hearing to have him temporarily removed. The system failed. His father failed, but the system failed little Corey tremendously, and he paid the ultimate sacrifice for that.
Nancy, can I make a comment about that?
Yeah, jump in, and I want to clarify what I heard, Bethany. I think that he was reported over 100 times. Did I hear that correctly?
That's right. That's right. There were many, a hundred calls, over 100 that were made, not only from Corey's mother, from Corey's school teacher, who had said, there's abuse, there's neglect, there's an abuse, a repeated number of phone calls coming into the Department of Children. And just one day before his death, the judge denied that emergency hearing.
Bethany?
You know, Nancy, I see this all the time in my practice, parents who are reporting abuse. And, you know, what happens is that they eventually become paranoid, obsessed, and they kind of look and sound crazy. Like they discredit themselves in some ways because they are so upset. A parent's job is to protect a child, and here the system is actually interfering with the maternal instinct, the drive to protect. And so that the more the parent pleads with Child Protective Services, the more they're kind of dismissed and devalued as being just sort of a crazy parent or a part of a domestic abuse situation. And I think that there has to be better training, that parents whose children are being abused often present with a lot of anxiety, a lot of panic, a lot of paranoia, and that is the most credible sign that they are telling the truth.
On March 31st, 2021, Michelo filed paperwork seeking emergency custody of Corey while DCPP investigated her latest allegation of abuse. The agency had seen the video of Corey running on the treadmill, and a caseworker later told police that he had photographed and investigated bruising on Corey 6 days after the alleged incident. A report submitted by DCPP about the March 20 incident played a crucial role in the judge's decision, which said the court does not find that Corey is in danger of imminent and irreparable harm. Therefore, the court does not find a temporary modification of the party's custody and parenting time arrangement appropriate at this time. Michelo left Corey with his father the morning of April 2nd, 2021. At 3:30 that afternoon, Gregor told the mom he was taking Corey to the hospital. 2 hours later, Corey died.
Another judge with his head up his rear end does not find Corey in danger of imminent harm and refuses to modify visitation. The mom forced to leave the six-year-old boy with dad that afternoon. He goes to the ER and dies. Why is the judge still on the bench? Just confused, concerned. And also, I want you to hear the teacher one more time. It's not just the mom they're making look crazy because she's reported dad 100 times over 20 months. The teacher raised the red bell of alarm, but nobody listened. Listen to Kim Peace. This is Corey's first grade teacher, and I want you to notice that she sees the bruises, and Corey is then kept on virtual learning remote. Listen.
What, if any, observations did you make of Corey when you saw him virtually on March 29th?
I saw bruises on his cheek.
Is that the same as what you were describing from March 23rd?
No, that.
And did Corey attend school virtually on March 30th?
Yes.
Did you observe him?
Yes.
What, if any, observations did you make?
The bruising.
The teacher, the first grade teacher, you know, you expect the teacher to be sending home construction paper art and checks and big stars on the child's papers they do at school. Instead, first grade teacher's on the stand describing day after day after day of bruising on this boy. And did you hear the prosecutor? She's really good. State, hey, is that the same bruises you described on March 23? She goes, oh, no, this is March 30. By this time, they were keeping him home on remote. Did you see daddy not even shed one tear?
Nancy, I also noticed that the dad looked quizzical, like he was so stumped by how this could have happened. I was scanning his face, and he kind of looks like a person who's, you know, the pathological liar, the abuser, the criminality, a person who has criminality. And you ask him about the crime and they go, what? Me? I never did that. It's almost like he's playing a role in court.
The boy is dead. Corey is dead. That trial happening now. We stop to remember American hero, Deputy Sheriff Tobin Bolter, just 27. Sheriff Bolter was shot while conducting a routine traffic stop, Boise, Idaho. A father-to-be, Sheriff Bolter, expecting a new baby with his wife. He leaves behind his grieving wife, Abby, and his unborn baby, and his family. American hero, Deputy Sheriff Tobin Bolter. I want to thank our guests for being with us in this extremely difficult case to cover. But I want to thank you for being with us tonight and facing the facts. Nancy Grace signing off. Good night, friend.